720 WGN. It's Amy Booth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Happy Saturday to you. Lots of people running around Michigan Avenue, all bundled up, looking festive and cozy, getting ready for the parade tonight where they light up the trees. Very beautiful, family-friendly event. I know everyone is looking forward to that here at WGN Radio. Today on the Business Lunch Show, we've got lots to talk about, but we could not possibly step into the Thanksgiving and shopping season without a visit from our good friend Lisa Dietlin. She's president and CEO of Lisa M. Dietlin & Associates and the founder of the Institute of Transformational Philanthropy. And we love her, having her on the show, because she always brings such excellent info and she always helps us be better people. So we're always happy to see you. Welcome back to the show, Lisa.
Hey, happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday to you, and happy almost Thanksgiving.
I can't believe it's here.
Well, you know, when we think about Thanksgiving, we think about stuffing ourselves and passing out on the couch and watching football. But but
right.
The reality is that it's yet another day for a lot of people in Chicago and around the world, of course, that they have to think about food and they have to worry about it and where it's coming from.
So many people don't understand that hunger is a 365-day problem in this country. 50 million people, Amy, 50 million people don't know where their next meal is going to come from.
And that's a lot of children and seniors, especially.
Absolutely. They say upwards of 35% are children in that number. That it's moms and dads that are working minimum wage. We've seen that debate take place here in Chicago and throughout the country, and they just can't make ends meet. So do they buy groceries or do they pay the rent? Do they fix that unexpected repair of where the tire was flat or the furnace went out, or do they buy groceries? So they don't know where food's coming from. And here in Chicago, it's almost 900,000 people. Now, almost 900,000 people access food banks.
One in six Chicagoans.
Yeah. So if there's six of you together right now, or there's six of you walking on the street, or six of you at a house, one of you potentially could be hungry. I mean, that's the representation.
And has some degree of food insecurity. And I think when we think about that, we think about bare cupboards. But sometimes that could just mean mom or dad skips a meal so the kids can eat.
Absolutely.
Or you don't know where the weekend food is coming from,
or
something like that.
Or you water down the milk. Or there's never any seconds for the kids to have that. They've never even experienced that full belly. I mean, I heard a story about a man when he was growing up that was so hungry that he and his brothers would put a belt around their stomach and pull it really tight because that pain was less than the pain of hunger in their stomach.
I mean, just such a heartbreaking story. And he was in school,
you know, and his parents were working, and they just didn't.
And
they,
how can you focus on your education and all that if you're thinking just about not, you know, if you can't even fuel your brain and body to do that?
Absolutely. And they say a lot of times the problems that kids with behavior is not really a behavior problem, but a hunger problem. And I don't know, I was talking to my students yesterday at Northwestern, and I said, you know, we were talking about this issue, and I said, I don't know about you, but I get hangry. I get hungry and angry at the same time. And if I'm a little kid and I haven't had good nutrition over the weekend, or you know, my last meal was my free lunch at school. What do I do?
Yeah.
You know, how do I behave? I probably don't behave well.
And so I love your recommendation of making Thanksgiving giving part of your Thanksgiving tradition, which is wonderful. I've done that many Thanksgivings. It is such a special feeling to serve in a soup kitchen on Thanksgiving or Christmas or any time of year. I think it's especially meaningful to make it part of your own tradition.
Absolutely. And there's many ways you can do it. You can do exactly what you said. You could find a nonprofit organization that is serving a meal and go and serve. Though it seems like everybody wants to do that on Thanksgiving. You could make a commitment with your family. Okay, we're not going to do Thanksgiving, but we're going to do the Saturday after Thanksgiving. That's going to be our tradition. Or we're going to combat Black Friday and we're going to serve in a soup kitchen or a pantry.
Instead of camping out in a Walmart to go elbow people over a VCR
or
whatever.
Maybe you could bring food there, but no.
We're going to go do this, which is a much better human use of your time.
Absolutely. But there's senior citizen centers, there's hospitals, there's many places to go. And if they're already, you know, scheduled with volunteers, you know, why don't you go and be company? Why don't you go and socialize with folks that might be veterans in a VA hospital or senior citizens that might be in a nursing home and not have family around that can come and visit, or they come and visit for a short period of time, or children in hospitals. Now, I always recommend to listeners, call ahead, find out what the rules are. Just don't show up with a turkey dinner at one of these places. But oftentimes, VFWs or Elks or Moose or the civic clubs, they have programs too. So there's lots of places to check, and don't give up. Sometimes donors get frustrated because they call and they want to do something and nobody calls them back. Well, don't stop there. Find another organization. There are 1.6 million nonprofits registered in this country. Somebody wants your help. I can guarantee it.
And then also, if you maybe don't have the time but want to do this next year, you haven't worked it in for this year, maybe your house is already filled with guests and you can't swing that. There's a lot of organizations that you can give financially to.
Absolutely.
Feeding America is one.
I love Feeding America, and that is wherever you are, there's a food bank that's part of Feeding America. So if you go on the Feeding America website, you put in your zip code, the food bank will come up, and you can make a donation there. There's obviously in Chicago, the Greater Chicago Food Depository does amazing work at distributing the food to the soup kitchens and pantries. But Habitat for Humanity, we think about them as building houses, but they're also a resource in this country for people who are in need. So people don't just show up and say, I need shelter. They say, I need shelter and I need food. So there's lots of organizations that are addressing the hunger issue. And I also encourage people, put together a package of food that you want to donate either to a food pantry or a food kitchen or, you know, a food bank. But don't just clean out your pantry of things you don't want. You know,
that's an important tip, because you know what? People do that.
They do that all the time.
And they'll go, oh, you know what? I got that gift basket and there was this weird box of Melba toast. I'll throw that in there. And like, if you don't want it.
They don't want it. The people receiving it. It reminds me, you know, my mom and I were laughing this morning. We were talking about the Seinfeld episode with the muffin tops, you know, and how Elaine went to donate the stumps, you know, to the homeless and thought she was doing great. And the woman said, hey, we like the muffin tops too. And I think, you know, we forget about that. That it's not that caviar, that horseradish, whatever, that you're never going to use that you put in the basket. Actually go and buy food that you would like to eat. And especially if you're wanting it to be in time for Thanksgiving and or there's a need for it, fresh vegetables and fruit, very important.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one too. And also really nutritious protein, you know, I think peanut butter is usually one that I see on wish list, things
peanut
like that.
Butter, tuna fish, you know, even beef jerky in some food banks and food pantries has been approved as a snack for kids because it does provide protein. Yeah, there's a lot of sodium there, but we're trying to get nutritious food versus what they have access to in their home on a daily basis.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Lisa. Everybody, take her good advice and run with it. Connect with her on social media. People can follow you on Twitter.
Yep, Twitter at Lisa Dietlin, Facebook, Lisa Dietlin. They can find me, and that's Dietlin.
And she's full of good ideas to help us all be better people. So we'll be right back on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. It's kind of a cozy up by the fire in the radio sort of Saturday, and I hope you are warm and dry, or I hope you are bundling up and getting ready to come outside for the lovely lighting up of Michigan Avenue parade that's set to happen a little bit later this evening. I know there's lots of people out on Michigan Avenue, all bundled up, looking very festive today, and we're happy to see them all out. So next up here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, we're talking to Amina Elahi, and she has a really interesting piece on ChicagoTribune.com right now in the Blue Sky area that is poses a very, very interesting question. Welcome to the show, Amina.
Hi, thank you.
So the question that is posed is, do you want to be hugged at work? And I think the prevailing culture right now is to hug at work is not so professional, but there's a bit of a backlash of that right now. And backlash may be too strong a word because that makes it sound kind of angry. But in fact, there's a lot of business leaders in the community. One that you talked with is one that we're big fans of on this show, and that's Dori McWhorter, the CEO of YWCA. And she says, you know, let's not be robots. Let's be quite human about this and hug if we feel so compelled. So talk to us a bit about this story and what was surprising to you as you reported on this story.
Yeah, it's very interesting because, you know, you mentioned Dori, and her whole perspective is that business is done by humans. So even though, you know, we need to maintain a level of professional decorum and we need to, you know, be cognizant of other people's, you know, personal space and that sort of thing, we also need to make human connections. And so I set out to try to see how different people in the area of innovation and sort of startups, you know, more new industries, how they're feeling about this idea of kind of moving beyond the technical sort of cold handshake that we usually expect in business settings. And I found a wide variety of responses. Some people, like Dori, hug anyone and everyone that they possibly can, and others just say, you know what, we're making deals, we need to keep it professional and not show anyone favoritism, the handshake is the way to go.
It's very interesting, and I see both sides of it very clearly. I think one key point that you mention in the piece at ChicagoTribune.com is when power is at play, it's really important to really think this through before you just kind of lean in for the hug.
Definitely. And I think it goes both ways. If you're a person in a position of power, you don't want to be potentially taking advantage of someone who may be too shy to say no to an advance, even if it's innocent in nature. And on the other hand, if you're someone who's maybe approaching a superior, you don't want to seem too forward in that direction either. You don't want to be overstepping your bounds. So I think in both cases, it's really important to consider what is the history of the relationship? How long have you known each other? Is there an expectation of how you might interact? And, you know, who else might interpret what you're doing in the right or wrong way?
Sure. Somebody might read into it and start some office gossip or something.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw so-and-so and so-and-so hugging, right?
Exactly.
And then we don't need rumors going. Well, I think it is really, really interesting. And I especially wonder about startup culture, because it does seem, you know, I think as early as we saw offices kind of go the Google route and put, you know, foosball tables and silent rooms to just kind of give yourself a timeout and start to recognize very human needs in the workplace. It seems like startup culture would be kind of leaders here and would be the most open to the idea of hugging or more, you know, genuine human kind of interactions. Did you find that to be the case, or did you find some more, older companies that had kind of gone this route too?
You know, I would say it's a bit of a mix. Throughout my reporting, I go to a lot of sort of networking events, after work, kind of happy hour type things where people from the startup community mix and mingle. And this is a big part of what happens here in Chicago. And at those, I see lots of sort of hugging, embracing, maybe even a kiss on the cheek every once in a while. But really, it depends on who the people are, of course. Mm-hmm. More at conferences and more formal events like that, I think people tend to keep it to the handshake because it's the more traditional way. But I have spoken to people who feel that in this world of startups where everyone's kind of, you know, rooting for each other, even though there is competition, there is that feeling of sort of camaraderie, and they might feel like a hug is a good way to express that. Mm-hmm. But said, I spoke to an etiquette expert whose recommendation was always start with a handshake. You might build up to the place where a hug might be acceptable, but, you know, starting out with something that personal or, you know, physically close could be misinterpreted and might be going too far.
Sure, I agree with that. I think that's a pretty good piece of advice. I mean, I think what I see the most is people open up their arms and face you and go, "I'm a hugger."
Yeah.
Put you on the spot to do, and I hope that you are too, which is, you know, usually fine. But I've seen instances where someone has done that, and you could tell the other person didn't want to be the one in the group to go, "I'm kind of a germaphobe," or "I don't really know you," or "I'm not into doing that." You know?
Right. And, you know, one of the people I spoke to for the story, Imran Ahmed, he's a VC. He works at OCA Ventures. And he said that he's not a hugger. Like, even in his personal life, he doesn't really like to hug that much. So his move is kind of when he sees someone coming toward them, before they bring out their arms, he sticks his hand out for a handshake. But that way he's not really rebuffing them, but he's indicating that this is kind of how I prefer to interact.
Yeah, here's my limit. Here's the line. Here's my territorial bubble. Don't cross it.
Exactly.
And I think, too, as we think about this, if this is something someone wants to embrace, I think it's really important also to think about cultural differences, because there are some instances where it would not be appropriate, say, for a man and a woman to shake hands, or, you know, there's just some cultures that will naturally just hug you and kiss you on the cheek as you, you know, even in a business setting. And I think there's two extremes there that we have to be mindful of if we're, you know, traveling, if we're doing international business, something like that.
Definitely. And I think, you know, anywhere you go, it's probably safe to maybe start with the handshake if you can. And if the other person indicates that, you know, that's their cultural custom, that they prefer to do something more, you can try to go along with it. You know, the etiquette expert I spoke with said perhaps the worst thing you can do is just shut someone else down if they're mm-hmm. trying to, you know, do a little more, because it's a business relationship. They don't have to not be offended by that. So you just want to be careful.
Sure. Well, it's an excellent idea to think through this and kind of think about it. And I always enjoy any conversation that sort of challenges the norm a little bit. So thank you very much for joining us and for writing this and making us consider these very important questions.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Amina Alahi, thank you so much and have a wonderful afternoon. We are going to take a little break and get you to news. And then when we come back, we are talking about all kinds of other good stuff, including your finances and whether or not tipping is here to stay. We'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, it's Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks so much for being with us today. I hope you are cozied up by a roaring fire and the cozy glow of your radio on a day like today and enjoying this first snowy day of the season. Well, my friends, we still have lots to get to here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And now it's time for a visit from our good friend, CJ Jensen. And he is from Ameriprise, and we love him, and we love all the advice he gives us because he is full of wonderful information. And, of course, you can call us 312-981-7200. And if you need to email him, he will take your emails, craig.e.jensen@ampf.com. Right.com. That's the one. And so if you do not get through, you can always email him your questions because he knows all. And right now it is that time of year to talk about all the year end stuff that we have to scramble to do to make sure that we end the year in a strong and financially sound way and set ourselves up to win wonderfully in 2016.
Yep, it's that time.
It is that time where we have to get organized and pull out that big old pile of paper and go, what do I need to keep? What can I throw away? What is important? What did I do wrong? All of those things. So, I think the thing we all probably should think about right now, because we need to fix it right now if it's a problem, is reducing our taxable income through either charitable donations, because I know year-end giving is such a big thing. We're all getting all those in the mailbox, or by selling off stock or things like that that maybe didn't perform as well this year as we wanted.
Yep. You got a little over a month to take care of those activities. So, yeah, and I would say first thing you want to do is clean out your closets. You talked about cleaning out paper. Well, charitable donations are a way to get rid of items from your house and then also claim them as a tax deduction on your tax return. So reducing that charitable income, or excuse me, that taxable income. The other thing is stock donations. You can actually donate your stock. I have several clients that pay their temple dues every year with stock from their portfolio. That way they never have to claim the appreciation in value. So that's another thing to think about donating is any kind of securities or stock. Another thing on the list is selling those stocks that are a losers this year. So it hasn't been exactly a great year in the market.
We don't want to call anything a loser. We just want to say maybe not a winner, not a first place winner.
Yeah, they're at a loss. So right. Anyhow, that can be nice because if you sold some that were at a gain earlier in the year, well, let's take some of those losses and offset those gains. Or you can actually take a little bit of those capital losses against your taxable income in most situations as well. Mm-hmm. So.
Go ahead. No, you look like you had another good thought there. But I also want to ask about if there's, you know, we think about sometimes deferring some income. I think especially if it's a kind of a year end thing or a project or something like that we're closing out. You know, how do we start to approach that idea of deferring something into the following year?
Yeah, usually that works a lot better for business owners. So if you've got a big client contract that you're getting payments on, maybe you can say, hey, you know, don't pay this until January. That way, you don't have to claim the income this year, and you won't have to pay the taxes until next year. So it's deferral of that kind of income. So business owners have a lot more flexibility with that. So there's definitely things there. Also making big expenditures towards the end of the year. You know, if you need that new computer or something like that. Now's the time to do it. So don't wait till January because then you can't claim the claim the expense until next year's taxes.
Right. And you want to get that now. Get that on the books. Get it done. Mm-hmm. And then also we need to think about flexible spending accounts. It's that time of year where we see everybody over at the drugstore buying boxes and boxes of Band-Aids and Pepto and all those things kind of, you know, using up the end of their flexible spending accounts. Are there bigger or more meaningful ways to do that? Or is it really just about stocking up on your first aid and things like that?
It's kind of about stocking up, but it's also doing, like, if you put off your physical this year, maybe doing that or the dental appointment, you know, get your cleaning done in December so you can spend those dollars out of your flexible spending account, glasses, things along those lines. So a lot of those programs are still use it or lose it. So if you don't use the money, the company gets to retain it, and it's better that you get advantage of it and not them.
It's your money.
That's
right. You got to use it up.
Yep. They took it out of your paycheck, so you better spend
it. You better spend every, buy every last Band-Aid you
have coming to you, my friends. And then, so then we look ahead to 2016 and we think about our goals and things like that. And as you have pointed out before to us, that is excellent advice. It's not just about setting a goal, but it's creating a path to get there. And so what are the most common goals, but more importantly, what are the most overlooked goals that are easily attainable?
I'd say the most common are probably retirement and children's education. So children's education pulls back into this year. You want to fund your 529 plan or your Coverdale IRA, education IRA. If you still have the ability to do that, that's something you want to do before year end. But then, yeah, say, okay, well, you know, it's going to be, you know, 10, 15 years before Tommy goes to college. So how do you put those dollars away and making sure that you're putting enough away? So that's one. And then retirement, the retirement contributions didn't change, but you want to make sure you're saving enough, meaning the contribution limits didn't change from 15 to 16. But that's another thing, a year-end planning thing, is making sure you've got about a little over 30 days. So if you can bump up those a little bit. So those are two big things that are bigger things, that, people think of from a planning, perspective. Simple things, though, is just creating that cash reserve. So, you know, making sure that you're eye and watchful of your spending over the holidays and thinking, okay, well, it would be nice to have a little bit more of a cash cushion in that savings account. So that's something that is a shorter term thing, but gives you a lot of confidence and makes you feel a lot better about yourself when you've got some money in that savings account.
Sure, because, I mean, things happen and it doesn't take much. I mean, it can be a blown tire or a, you know, something with the car or the, the HVAC in your home or something like that. And you're set back. I mean, there's, you know, it's kind of, it makes for a really tight month or a couple months or something like that. Yep. So it's really important to have that, that cash reserve. You know, any other things that are maybe bigger things for the year that people, that are fairly simple goals that people should be setting that, that maybe aren't the first thing we think of when we look at the year ahead? Or are those kind of the basic things we need to cover first?
Those are the more basic things. Usually there's not a, or there's not a lot of other simple things. You know, it's just takes a little bit of planning. And I think that's number one in what I help clients do is just create something so they are on track for those those bigger goals and making sure that, you know, if it's a house purchase or something like that, that they're putting away something every single month in order to accomplish those goals.
So they get there. And that's why we need you.
Yep.
And that's why we always appreciate your information. So again, let me give you that email address so you can talk to him directly. That's craig.e.jensen, J-E-N-S-E-N, at ampfameriprisefinancial.com. Email him. He shall answer all of your questions and do so so wonderfully. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Always good to see you. Happy Thanksgiving if we don't see you before.
Yeah, same to you.
All right. We'll be right back here in just a bit on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks so much for being with us today. I hope you are cozied up by the radio, maybe by the fireplace too. It's that kind of day. Here's we're watching the first snow of the season coming down here on Michigan Avenue. People are getting ready for the beautiful light parade tonight where everyone lights up Michigan Avenue. That'll be lovely, a lovely family event if you are so inclined to come on down this way and say hello to us. Well, next up here on the business, on the Wintrust Business Lunch, we've got our friend Peter Frost from Crane's Chicago Business with us on the phone. Hi, Peter. How are you?
Happy winter, Amy.
Happy winter to you. So you had a story recently that was so interesting to me, and it was about the idea of tipping becoming obsolete. And we've seen that in a couple of places, but we haven't been talking about it too much in Chicago. And suddenly it seems like it's really kind of upon us in Chicago.
Yeah, I think it is too. I mean, we've seen it here for a few years with the higher end restaurants, the ones, you know, like Alinea and Grace and El Ideas and Elizabeth and so forth. But yeah, we're starting to see it move into the level of restaurants right below that. We're seeing the Radler, which just implemented their no tipping plan. We're seeing it all the way down to places like Joe's Crab Shack. That fast, casual, you know, national chain is testing this out. So, yeah, it's starting to get some momentum.
And it's certainly very interesting. What do you think the origin of this was? Is this coming out of kind of the labor movement and as people are talking about a higher minimum wage? Or is this something else entirely?
No. I think you're right. I think it's a couple of things. And I think at the top of that list, like you say, is labor. in a lot of the bigger cities and even some of the smaller ones, you're starting to see the fight for 15. You're starting to see minimum wages rising. And that's putting pressure, of course, on restaurants. At the same time, there is a big shortage. Restaurants in this town particularly are having a hard time finding cooks. So in order to get some decent cooks in the back of the house, you can't pay them $11 an hour anymore. So that wage pressure in the back of the house is forcing restaurants to try to figure out different ways to be able to pay them because they're already operating on very slim margins.
Right. That is a really great point because we see servers who are making, you know, some servers, depending on the restaurant you're working in, you can clear a pretty good night. You can clear a few hundred dollars and it's, a, you know, adds up. And there's certainly people that do that full time that make a perfectly okay living, whereas cooks in the back are not making nearly as much as the servers. And although I think, you know, there's many places that require the servers to tip out the busser and sometimes the kitchen or the expo, the person putting the food on the trays and things like that, and the hostess and all that. So not all of that is necessarily staying with the server. But so this is really kind of an idea of redistributing and kind of addressing inequity in certain areas of restaurant labor, certainly.
It is. And it's really complicated, too. The laws that govern tipping are very complicated. They're always changing. And so, you know, it's not technically legal for the servers to be forced to share their tips with anybody in the back of the house. So dishwashers, cooks, chefs. Whatever, they're not allowed to do that under the law. They're only allowed to share the tips with people who have direct contact with the customer. So the laws here are part of the reason you're seeing restaurants move on this because they recognize this fundamental inequity between the front of the house and the back of the house. I mean, sure. At a higher end restaurant, Amy, a server can take home six figures. And a cook might take home $40,000.
Right.
And I think everyone understands. I don't think anyone thinks that's fair.
Right. Definitely. And I mean, I think it's an interesting idea, certainly. And I know, but I can see, I waited tables for years and years. And so I can kind of see both sides of it. Because on one hand, I think there's a misconception that, you know, what constitutes shorting somebody on a tip? I mean, an example I've pointed to before is if you bring someone a steak and it's not cooked to exactly how they wanted it, they'll say something like, well, there goes your tip. Okay, well, I didn't cook your food or touch it. I didn't cut your steak and have to check the temperature. In fact, that's why I asked you to check it, something like that. So I think there's that. And this would, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize servers are making $2 or $3 an hour as base pay. And so the bulk of it is really the tips. But then I think there's another side of this that I've kind of heard a bit from servers, just kind of anecdotally, where the idea of doing away with tips certainly changes the way their relationship to their taxes.
Yeah, well, there are a few things there. I mean, you bring up a lot of good points. On the flip side, you know, whereas a server may get punished for the steak that's undercooked. A server who also doesn't do a great job also is the beneficiary of a person who tips 20% no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Radler, for example, they were averaging 22.7% in tips, and you know, one of the owners there told me, "Listen, some of our worst servers." have the best hourly pay because we only bring them in when the restaurant's very busy. So no matter how good they do, they're going to be taking home money because people tip anyway. So I think that's one of the points. The other point that he makes is that, okay, this time of the year when everyone's dining out, you might make $1,500 a week if you're a server, right? And the restaurant's killing it. And at the same time, in the middle of August, when nobody's dining out, they're making $400 a week.
That's a good point.
So what offering them an hourly wage does, that's above the $5 an hour, which is the non-tip wage, this helps some smoothing to it. It helps give servers some predictability with their wages. So if it's a good night, they'll make the same thing they would as if it was a bad night.
It's interesting. I mean, I have had the pleasure and privilege of going to Next before, and that's one of the restaurants Chef Grant Achatz is behind and that has explored this idea. And I think it's an interesting concept, right? Because what you do is you get a ticket and it becomes kind of like an experience and you go in and you give them your ticket and the meal shows up. And it's kind of, you don't even have to sit there and do math. You don't have to squabble over the bill. It's just kind of, it's already dealt with before you even walk in the door. So I think from a customer point of view, I think it's much easier because everything is dealt with and you can just kind of enjoy your night.
I agree with you. I've also been to Next, and that's the nice part about it, right? At the end of the night, you don't have to give anybody your card. It's already taken care of. You just get up and you walk out.
Yeah.
And it seems to be working for them. You know, they've done this at all their restaurants, Nick Kokonis and Chef Grant Atkins. They've done this at all their restaurants, and, you know, it's really worked out for them. And you know, when you were at Next, I'm sure you got really good service.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and but one of the arguments on the other side is, you know, we're a tipping culture, and people in the front of the house aren't going to work as hard if they're not working for that, you know, for that tip from the customer. But I think Nick Kokonis and Grant Atkins have proved that, you know, you can still get really great service without that carrot hanging out in front of you.
Sure. Well, it'll be really interesting. And what do we think the timeline is as we start to see more and more restaurants going to this model? Are we going to see probably a lot in the next few months, or is this probably a year or two out?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say whether this is going to take hold, you know, wide scale in Chicago. I personally think that it is, and I think that it's going to happen over the next couple of years as the Chicago minimum wage rises. Because as you know, the minimum wage in Chicago is rising to $13 an hour here in a couple of years. And I think that's just going to put enough pressure on especially the higher end restaurants to make a move. And I think you're going to see more and more of them adopt this over the next couple of years.
Very, very interesting stuff. Well, we will follow you closely on social media and at chicagobusiness.com. Peter Frost, thanks so much for being with us today on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks. Have a good day.
All right, you too. All right, my friends, we're going to take a quick break and then get you to news. We'll be right back in just a bit, 720 WGN. All right, my friends, that does it for the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Amy Guth, and I'll be back here with you next week. But now we're going to turn things over to our good friend John Williams. Hi, John. What you got coming up on the show today?
You know, I was just looking at my schedule here, Amy. I've got about 4 hours of stuff and about 50 minutes to do it before that Northwestern game. So,
that's right.
So I'm either going to talk real fast or leave some of it on the table. But one of the things we'll talk about are Adele's sales. Did you get the new CD of Adele?
I've heard it, yeah.
I have. You know, everybody's heard Hello, and I knew she needed some of my money, so I went ahead and bought the album online yesterday, and I've been listening to it a lot. I just want to talk a little bit about it and how well it's doing and how it's changing the music business a little bit. That'll be one of the first things we talk about. We'll also play back part of our conversation with Steve Bertrand, Eric Zorn, and Kristen McQuarrie. They are the Mincing Rascals. That podcast is online. But we talked a lot in the podcast about Laquan McDonald and what happened in Chicago. We'll let you hear some of that and react in the first half hour. So we are off and rolling. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.